Know the Source on One Radio Network.
Your health, wealth, and well-being on OneRadioNetwork.com. Once again, here's Patrick.
Okay, here we are, hour two of our little show, October 16, 2018. Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. Talk about how the brain does not produce consciousness with a fellow who's written a book about upside-down thinking. That'll be cool. That'll be on Thursday. As we mentioned, Andrew Goss. Andrew Goss, tomorrow. Well, you've probably heard us talk about throughout over the years of a fellow, his name is Daniel Smith, and he's on the line. He's up in Washington. First off, let's see how we can hear Daniel. Daniel, good morning.
Good morning, Patrick.
How you doing there, brother?
I'm doing all right. It's good to hear your voice.
Well, good to hear your voice here. Daniel Smith, what an adventure you've had. My goodness, who'd have thunk it, huh?
Yeah.
Let's give folks a little bit of background who don't know who you are, and it's probably a lot of people. Daniel began selling a miracle mineral supplement called MMS that was really, I guess, brought out, wasn't it, Daniel, by Jim Humble years ago?
Yeah, Jim.
Talked to Jim over the years. And can you tell us, this is kind of it's an interesting supplement. It's chlorine dioxide, is it not? And you mix it with citric acid or something. It forms this substance that people have used for a lot of years to help get rid of viruses and all kinds of things.
Yes, well, traditionally MMS was just sodium chloride. You mix that with the food grade acids such as citric acid or acetic acid, which is vinegar, or lactic acid is also found in the patents and stuff on it. But you would basically create the chlorine dioxide anion, often referred to as chlorite, which is very effective pathogen killer.
So sodium chloride is a substance that gets mixed with the acid cause, and that creates chlorine dioxide.
Yep.
I hit it kind of backwards. Yes. Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah. No, it's all right. Yeah. MMS is NaClO2, and when you add it with the food grade acid, you're basically ripping the Na off, the sodium ions off, and you end up with in solution the chlorine dioxide anion in solution. So. Yeah.
I see. And you began selling that when?
In 2007 was when we first placed it on the internet. In fact, it was kind of fun. I was working for a startup, a .com startup, and there was some difficulty getting me paid one month, and we had always had a dream of starting a project, which we call Project Green Life, where we made alternative health products available and just pursued a higher consciousness way. And we were living out in the country at the time, but money wasn't coming in. So we happened to have 7 bottles of MMS that we had just gotten in the cupboard. And, baby needed diapers and 7 wasn't really a baby at the time, but I mean, she was a toddler, but we just needed groceries and things. So we thought, well, okay, let's get rid of these and see what we can get. And they sold just as quick as we put them up. And we kind of took that as an indicator that, man, this, Project Green Life is really something that we really want to do. And that's how we got into it in 2007, October.
I see. And so you began selling sodium chloride.
Sodium chloride in solution, the MMS, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that grew. Project Green Life grew from that. We sold all kinds of different alternative health products over the years.
Mm-hmm.
So
Okay, so you began Stella in 2007, and it really grew. Did you actually become a really big seller of this MMS product?
Well, yeah.
Big's a relative term, I guess, but just give us an idea. Were you pretty well known around the world?
Yeah, we sold into 160 countries, and you know, it took off pretty fast. We created sort of an affiliate program so that people could share it with others, and because one of the things that people love to do was share MMS because it was so effective for so many things.
Right.
So because I had a background in technology, I was able to create a, you know, relatively quick affiliate program that allowed people to share it and then get 50% of the price, the retail price back. So, for example, an MMS bottle of MMS was $20. Our cost was $4 to $5. And so we would give the seller $10.
Wow.
And that just took off.
Yeah, you can
like
imagine.
Wildfire.
Ooh. Yeah, it's a big, big hit. Yeah.
Yeah, all over the world.
Big commission. Yeah, wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, that sort of really made it grow. And so at the time, Project Green Life became really, well, the probably the biggest reseller of MMS when all the things happened. So,
yeah. So all the things happened is when people started to give you a hard time about selling it. So the FDA began contacting you. Is that my understanding?
Yeah, what happened is in 2010, they showed up, sorry, my bird.
Oh, that's right. We have sound effects. We had Doodle chewing on her bone earlier, no problem.
Well, she hears me chatting, and she might think I'm talking to her, or she's looking out the back window and seeing things.
We love sound effects. It's great.
Okay. So, yeah, so in 2010, the FDA visited our fulfillment center, which was a third-party company. And really gave them a hard time over a period of 3 days and did the plant maps and took pictures and were sort of threatening and mm-hmm. just really kind of shut them down. And and that was really alarming for them, the fulfillment company.
Oh, the fulfillment. These would people, I guess you would take the orders and then you had a company that sent everything out.
Yeah. Okay. So they had a warehouse where they stocked everything.
And where was this, where was the warehouse?
In Spokane, Washington.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So, yeah, they, and at the time I called an attorney, Nancy Lord, who was a FDA attorney and won a great trial, you know, against the FDA back in her time. And she said, well, look, maybe something's wrong with the website. Maybe you have things on there you shouldn't have on there. Let's call them and see what's going on. Called them. And there wasn't really anything on our website that was offensive. They just said, we don't like your product and we'd like you to do a voluntary recall. And my, we'd like you to do a voluntary recall. It's not really all that voluntary though, because if you don't, we're going to make your life miserable. And, so I actually did a voluntary recall and, that we knew that was going to really set us back and it did. And, we, from there, it was a few months later that we were put in touch with a company down in Texas that started private associations and represented that there would be, regulatory oversight as a private association.
Right.
And we really bought into that and thought that was true and it sounded good, tickled our ears. And, you know, I did a little due diligence and really felt like it was the right thing to do. But all it did was really, make the FDA very angry.
That's what you needed,
how,
right?
How dare you try and, bypass our regulatory oversight.
Uh-huh.
And, so we did send a series of letters that we were counseled to send, discussing the legalities of the private association and whatnot. And they were not acknowledged. And we were told that if they didn't acknowledge them, that silence was consent. I'm sure you've heard this sort of thing before. And, but really what silence means is that they're undertaking a behind-the-scenes stance and they were basically taking pictures of our house and pulling our garbage and doing everything that they needed to do in order to acquire search warrants that would allow them to come in and confiscate, we should say search and seizure, confiscate basically bank funds, product, everything, all in just without letting you know what's going on. So rather than saying, yeah, we do have a legal valid objection to what you're doing, because we asked that, and, you know, doing it under the private association, rather than answering that, they went into this, you know, full-scale investigation behind the scenes that we didn't know about. So what we were led to believe was that if they weren't going to answer, it was because there wasn't a legal valid objection and we were good to go. So we started up as a private association and began reselling MMS. And that's when they came in and raided our facilities. They raided our home office, the fulfillment company, and the manufacturing company, where the new fulfillment company at that time, all at once, all in one day. They brought agents from all over the United States.
Wow.
There was probably 10 to 12 agents per location.
And what year was that, or what month and year was that?
That was in 2011, so that was a year later. That was after the first visit.
When you say all locations, the different sub parts of your company that you had?
Yeah, so the fulfillment company was in a separate location. The manufacturing plant was in a separate location. And then we ran our offices at another location, and our support services were out of another location.
I see. So they just came in swarms, you know, as they say in the Declaration of Independence, right? Swarms of soldiers.
Yeah.
Wow, man. You know, I think it's worth explaining to our listeners about this idea of silence being, there's a lot of people around there, what Daniel's talking about, out there in the world that sell the idea of doing a lot of things on your own and you know, not paying taxes or whatever, doing this or sending people letters that you owe me $1 million, if they don't answer they owe you, and this, you know,
it's all
nonsense, trust me. You folks don't get involved in any of this stuff. And I believed this stuff for a long time, and I got into trouble too. People sell this thing, and but my experience is, and I don't know, maybe just for fun, we should talk about it. Might be help other people who might keep them out of trouble. My experiences and what I've been taught by one of my mentors, Andrew Goss, who's our money guy, who I've known for 25 years, who really knows the Constitution backwards and forwards and really understands all this commercial law and all this stuff, you know. He says that all of these things that people are out there teaching are, in a sense, true. They really are. I mean, they really are true. You know, they didn't pass a certain amendment for the taxation, and they've got to be, you know, there has to be appropriation, and it's, you know, we're not really in the United States. We're you know, Washington, D.C. is the only one they have jurisdiction, and all this nonsense.
Congress didn't have a quorum.
Oh, believe me, I went down this road, you know. And technically it's true. I mean, technically it's true. There was even a Supreme Court decision that 1873, Pollock, check it out, Pollock, that actually says in the Supreme Court that when you trade your labor for money, right, that is not income. The only thing that's income is when you buy something and you resell it for a profit. That's income. So all this income tax is really not even income. But here's the deal, what I've been taught, and I didn't know this for a lot of years, and you see if you want, if you agree with this, that when we are in the system, right, we have a Social Security card, we have signed contracts, we have a mortgage, we use Federal Reserve notes, we have a driver's license, we have a birth certificate. When we're in this system, what we call the matrix, right, mm-hmm. None of this stuff matters, you know.
Right.
That's your understanding now. None of this stuff matters. You don't. There is no constitutional courts. There is no. You know, they do whatever they want in court.
Oh, I mean, the federal government does what they want, and it's funny. I don't really even have a beef with the federal government anymore.
I know you don't. We're going to talk about that. That's great. Good for you. God love you, man. You're so cool to go through this and not have it. So anyway, that's just a sidelight, folks. So just be careful, you know, because I get emails all the time and say, Patrick, what do you think about this? There's a guy saying that, you know, you don't have to do this, you don't have to have a driver's license and all this stuff. And
let me say this about that.
Yeah, you're going to know. You give me your opinion. I've talked long enough on it.
Well, no, I just, you know, there is a thing called status correction, but it is a rabbit hole of monumental proportions that I've never met anyone who's made it all the way through and been free and clear of the encumbrances of federal government.
Yeah.
Now, you see these wins in state government, and you really don't know why. They speculate, well, I said some magic words in the courtroom or something like that. And I like, yeah, but okay, show me a federal case, a recent federal case. Show me. And that's the thing, is I looked high and low for a remedy. I paid, you know, every guru money, and I flew people out. And at the end of the day, there wasn't a remedy. It all sounds great, but the federal government does what the federal government wants to do. And there's a reason for that. And we can allow, relinquish, and release and actually get more out of it, in my opinion.
Okay.
And I know that
explain what you just said, that last part. So you agree with the idea that when we're in the Matrix, there is no remedy except paying Caesar what Caesar's owed. Paying to Caesar, man, just give him his money. What is that last part you said there?
Well, okay, so, you know, where I come from now is, look, the federal government is a monumental thing, and it's filled with really good people who are doing their job, but it's this mechanism that's constantly running, and, you know, all of the constitutionalist arguments in the world are not going to move it. I don't know what's going to change it or when it's going to change. But in the meanwhile, it's doing a thing. You know, I know you really believe in how we sort of create our reality. Mm-hmm. And we've created this. We've created this, let's call it a monster if we want. But this is doing its work in us, and if we just allow, relinquish, and release, that was really my my lesson from all of this. We can have a life that's filled with more peace, regardless of what the federal government's doing in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I like that. Allow, relinquish, and release is what you kind of learned to do when you were in jail, which we haven't even got to. God love you. So, okay, so let's go back to, so at what point did you feel like, wow, I could really be in a jam here, you know? I could maybe have to go to jail.
Well, that all happened February 2nd, 2013. I think it was the date. We were getting up in the morning, getting Sabby, our daughter, ready for school. We had moved to Ashland. She had gotten her into the Waldorf school there. This is 2 years after the raids, and you know, more than one trip to a grand jury that didn't result in an indictment. And so we felt we were free and clear.
First grand jury, they didn't want to indict.
They didn't. There was at least two trips to the grand jury where they didn't indict. And finally, the way they got the jury to indict was to have one witness who testified in purely hearsay manner, and that was the federal agent. They brought in no other witnesses, and they got him to sign on the line. And they used a story which is just not even true about how a gal died using MMS, Sylvia Fink, you know, God bless her. I don't even really like talking about it, but it is a part of the MMS story, and there are people that claim, especially the news media, really likes to do this. ABC did a great special that I got to see on television while I was in prison. I don't know what it was, Nightline or 2020 or something like that. I'm not sure. So I got sidetracked there.
That's okay.
What was that?
When you first realized it.
Oh, when I was in the jam.
And the grand jury finally they had somebody that actually testified that somebody died from MMS, and that then the grand jury returned an indictment thing.
Yeah, wow. That was how they opened the whole thing up, and and so, we had moved to Ashland. We figured, well, it's been 2 years; they haven't indicted. Honestly, we didn't do anything wrong. And then, of course, they show up at our house on this morning and arrested us. And that's when we all knew we were in a jam.
Oh, so they actually came and took you?
Uh-huh, yeah. They had warrants for our arrest.
Whoa, man.
Because they had secured the indictment. And thankfully, there were some local friends who took Sabby in. The rest of the kids have all left home. They're grown up and gone. But Sabby was still young. And we went to jail for... It took about 30 days before they shipped us back to Spokane, where the indictment had come out of.
So your wife, too, was in jail?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a terrifying experience.
Oh, I bet that was just strange.
First trip on Con Air.
I wonder why it took so long for your attorney to get you out on bail?
Well, I didn't have an attorney at that time.
Oh, you didn't?
I mean, I had, Nancy was in Nevada, so she wasn't local.
I see.
And, that's when we knew we were in a jam. It was in 2013. It took another 2 years before it came to trial, actually more than 2 years. And that was a whole story in itself.
Were you two in jail while you're waiting to go to trial?
We were out on bail after 30 days,
okay.
Pending trial, which we were very, very blessed,
to be able to pull that off.
Because 2.5 years in prison would have been difficult, just waiting for trial, Granted, I would have done the most biggest portion of my time at that point, but
you did different fundraising things and friends and. You were able to raise the money to get the attorney to get you on bail.
Oh yeah, well actually they at that point we had a federal defender come in and he got me out on bail. Uh-huh. And then I was, listening to all the folks that I listened to a lot, too much of. Really. You've got to go pro se, you can't have anyone represent you.
Oh my god. Oh.
So I got up the courage to go pro se. That was a scary thing, actually, in federal court.
Tell folks what that is.
Oh, that's where you represent yourself and you don't have an attorney.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and we did that for 2.5 years before trial. And then a few months before trial, I said, look, I'm going to need to find someone to actually represent me during the trial. I had learned really quick, actually over the course of the 2 years, but there was nothing that I could say that could be heard. The court simply rejected every argument, even though the arguments were sound, they were well articulated and legally sound, but the federal government always wins. They always win. So look, it doesn't matter if you're right. It doesn't matter if you have the legal argument down.
It's just an event. Yeah. It's just a. I don't even know how to say it. Yeah, they just generally win. Unless you can get a really good, expensive attorney, could probably try to make some kind of a deal, And
well, yeah, there's some finesse that goes along with that. If you're being sort of this cocky, arrogant pro se,
you don't have a chance, man.
You're toast. You're toast.
Toast.
Give it up.
Toast. I went to do a pro se thing years ago. It was about some kind of a legal thing, and so I had this person coaching me, So I went in there trying to defend myself. Somebody was just trying to kind of mess with me. And this judge was really cool. You know, he said, son, let me tell you this. He said, you don't want to be in here by yourself. Let me just tell you that. Let me give you a fair warning right now. This is not going to end well.
I got the same warning.
You should just leave. He was cool, man. He just knew what was going to happen, you know. And so, well, of course, I didn't, you know, and they just kicked my butt. It's just, some things we go through here. So we're going to, so, my gosh. Okay, so you want to, let's continue this conversation. Can you hang right there for a second, Daniel?
Sure. Yeah.
We're with Daniel Smith. What an amazing story. 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. I hope you're gaining some knowledge and insight with this thing. And if nothing else, keep you out of trouble someday for not doing some stuff. Just be legal. Be legal. Here's a short clip with Wayne Blakely, the Living Streams guy. Listen to this.
Everything you eat converts to a fake, F-A-K-E, fake calcium molecule. That's what causes plaque.
Oh, so that's what causes the calcium
plaque.
Down up
that's
in your
why,
arteries.
That's why we have plaque all over our body. That's exactly why.
So if we don't have the proper probes in our small intestines and large,
right.
It produces a fake, which is a form of calcium that goes in the wrong spot.
And we can't absorb it. It's unabsorbable.
Right, but that's how it ends up in the arteries.
Exactly. Body pulls that up as an amino acid, but it's a calcium. It's fake. In other words, everything you eat converts to a fake calcium molecule. When I finished this research, I was dead serious about it. I'm dead serious about this. I could not understand why Americans were alive.
Oh, you mean after seeing the way this works?
How it works. Why a male at 25 years old has enough plaque in their body to have a heart attack.
Wow. And as you know, a lot of the calcium ends up in the brain as well. So these probes are very important, according to research, and Wayne's done a lot of it. Is this one of the major keys to calcification? It appears so. We'll see. Living probiotics, many to choose from, in our store on oneradionetwork.com. This whole electromagnetic thing now with 5G, you know, pretty wild. Smart meters, you know, it started with that years ago, and Wi-Fis and stuff and cell phone towers. It's a big challenge, and it's been proven. It's real science that these things can affect our cells and our body and our mitochondria and all of that. We talk a lot about protecting ourselves on the spiritual level, and that, believe me, you can do a lot with that, probably even more than these machines. But there is technology in the physical reality that really helps. Ken Roll has a lot of cool things, and the one I'm going to tell you about here is very cool, and you do this along with your spiritual things, and I believe, my opinion, and nobody listens to me, but you're going to be well protected, and you'll be fine. And again, if you don't have the money to buy the technical things, you can just totally focus on the spiritual end of it, and you can do just as well without it. But if you have the dollars to have these tools, you can use these, and they're just tools in physical reality. They're not necessary. I always say that, but they work. So check this out. Previously, we were talking with Brandon about the Blue Shield EMF device, and he says it goes out 90 yards in all directions.
It's an omnidirectional field that, if you think about a huge sphere that's expanding, that's essentially what the waveform pattern looks like.
Oh, that's cool. So it's putting frequencies into the body, and then how does that work in relation to electromagnetic field that's coming in the walls and the windows through a cell phone tower down the street?
Yeah, so the cell repeaters and Wi-Fi and all this electromagnetic radiation in the environment, people mistakenly think that this is somehow going to act like a shield and block the radiation and make it not appear on any kind of tri-field meter or any measuring device. And that's simply not the case. It's more of an energy medicine, so to speak, where it's stimulating the bodies at the cellular level to create a cellular response to make all the individual cells much stronger and more able to adapt to the EMF stressors. So that's number one on the physical or the somatic level, where the body is experiencing a decrease in stress from electromagnetic fields.
If you're interested, you can click on the Blue Shield ad on the front page of One Radio Network. Use promo code One Radio, or also contact Brandon through his website there when you click, and he'll give you more information. Front page Blue Shield EMF protection device. on OneRadioNetwork.com. They have the one you put in your home, which is cool, goes out 90 yards, and also the little personal model. And I carry that with me on my trip, and you can put it in your pocket. And also, if you go in a motel, hotel, something like that, you can just sleep with it. It's just about as big as a credit card, and that helps your body to just be stronger for these things. And it works, you know, it's been proven. This is technology goes back about 25 years out of Australia, and it's just Blue Shield. You can see it on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com. We're talking with Daniel Smith, who spent a few years in jail for selling Miracle Mineral Supplement. Daniel, you could probably use one of these Blue Shield things. You got a Wi-Fi thing around your ankle, so that's.
It's funny. I was just looking for it on your front page here.
Daniel, you got a little Wi-Fi on your ankle. God love you. So I just really appreciate you coming on and talking about it. I can just tell by, you know, for what it's worth, your energy and your state of consciousness that that you've really done well with this after all these years. It's just. And we'll talk about that if you want. But I think people would be interested, and I am, about on the back to the whole physical, you know, matrix thing, because it is interesting how it all happened. Was the main argument from the FDA that you were making claims about Miracle Mineral Supplement, Daniel Smith, or that this was just a dangerous substance that you shouldn't be selling? Yeah. I'm real curious about that.
Well, what they claimed that we had done was that we had done a thing called misbranding. And misbranding is sort of this catch-all for anything. So I'll give you the elevator pitch on this. I had to explain it while I was in prison to like 100 people,
I
right?
I bet they say, what are you in here for? Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, so it's like this. If I sell you a bottle of water, that's all good. But if I tell you it'll mitigate your dehydration, the FDA will classify it as a drug because it's being used to prevent or to mitigate or to cure a disease condition, or it's to change the structure or function of the human body. So that's how they say, if your intent is that it does any of this, we're going to capture it as a drug under a regulatory scheme. And once we capture it as a drug, it doesn't matter if it's approved or not. That's not the issue here. The issue here is once we capture it as a drug, we get to say what all the rules are for manufacturing a drug. And so what they said was, look, what they eventually took to trial was they said that your manufacturing facility, when we made the controlled buys, was not registered with the U.S. Secretary of Health as a drug manufacturer, which incidentally they didn't actually prove at trial. And when we raised it on appeal, they just ignored the question. And you know, it's the whole game that they play. But the point is that they said that we had misbranded in that the manufacturing facility had not been registered with the U.S. Secretary of Health. Then they said that we conspired to do it, because they got to add a conspiracy charge in there, because that's how they really ramp up the penal sum. And then they said that when we imported the product, the raw product from Canada, the sodium chloride solution, the standard traditional MSDS for sodium chloride says that it's used in chlorine dioxide generators and for odor control and various things like that. And so one particular time, the manufacturer shipped the standard MSDS. It came across the border, and they said, aha, you're saying that this is going to be used in odor control when you really intend to use it for a drug. And so you fraudulently imported.
Oh.
So those were the things that they went against us on.
I see.
And but how they really presented it to the jury was that this was this horribly dangerous thing, both the grand jury and the petite jury, and that that we were doing all this duplicitous stuff and trying to deceive the FDA. Well, we were trying to deceive the FDA. We're just trying to stay out of the FDA's way, and we didn't actually make claims on our website, but you can't get on the internet and not find claims being made about it. And they really, at sentencing, it was really clear that they wanted to make an example of somebody. PGL was the largest manufacturer at the time. And I'm sorry, is the bird bothering
you?
No,
she's okay, fine. Okay. Don't worry about it.
Okay. All right. And they really wanted to make an example, and
so your theory is that you were just such a big player in this that there must have been some real concern with it at the FDA that it was just getting out there too much. And so what do you think, that these guys just want to kind of grab you and make an example out of you?
Yeah, that's the Matrix story.
Yeah.
But the Matrix story isn't what really matters here. Right? You know, at the end of the day, 100 years from now, who's going to care? What matters is that I created this reality for myself. We all did. And what is the wisdom that I can learn from it?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, because we're running out of time.
No,
I
we have time. If you do, we have time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't worry.
The biggest thing for me is that, you know, and through the whole process, I felt like I had to change the world. I had to change the legal system because it was broken.
Yeah.
I had to change the FDA system because it was broken. I had to call, you know, the FDA agents, the prosecutor and the judge out for everything that was duplicitous and you know, deceptive and, you know, skirting the real issues and so forth. I was basically a cowboy.
Yeah.
And I felt like I had to change the world. And I had to change the Matrix. Well, guess what? You're not going to change the Matrix.
The Matrix is the Matrix, right? That's what it does for a living.
That's right. You have to rise above the Matrix. I love those movies. They really are.
Yeah.
They're so good. And so, you know, the Matrix is here for a reason. And we've created the Matrix. We're responsible for this. We're doing this. I love a great, you know, the Course in Miracles lesson.
Yeah.
You know, you're doing this. You're responsible for this.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple of big lessons, but one was that I'm not here to change the world. I'm not here to change the FDA. I'm not here to change the broken legal system. I'm here only to change me. And those things are the way they are, so that I can do that.
Wow. God love you. Well said, brother. I mean, you know, what you've just said and learned, I mean, that's worth, you know, everything.
Well,
that's the gold.
You know, the last 5 years of my life.
I know, you just had this jail karma thing. God, man.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, we have created it all, so why get angry with it, huh, Daniel? I mean, why? You know, but we all go through it. So,
and how I learned that was an important part of the journey.
Yeah, go
because,
ahead.
You know, it's not something that you just wake up one day and it occurs to you,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it took some subtle nudges from the universe and from my guides and, you know, following some rabbit trails and which, you know, I know you've had Dr. Michael Newton on your show.
Yeah.
Wonderful guy who clinical hypnotherapist who discovered the life between lives. You know, up until that time, sort of the big thing was past lives. And, but he kind of stumbled into the life between lives. What happens between lives? You know, if you're willing to consider that reincarnation is a possibility, then you might ask the question, well, what happens in between?
Yeah, what's going on in between there?
Well, it turns out there's a whole lot going on.
Sure.
And Michael Newton sort of delved into that with when he did his 7,000 case studies before he wrote the first book, Journey of Souls. And through a course of events, I came into some information. You know, mostly, you know, we listened to the radio a lot in prison, so I got some coast-to-coast shows. Unfortunately, I didn't get one radio network, but they had some great guests. Elena Gabor, a clinical hypnotherapist who wrote Home at the Tree of Life, and then Rich Martini, a filmmaker who wrote four books and did a documentary called Flipside. The book that I loved the most of his was Hacking the Afterlife, and It's a Wonderful Afterlife, Volume 1 and 2, and Flip Side. And then I wrote, I read just a host of other books. And what I wanted to know was, man, if this is true, what does it mean? Because what I figured out was that there was a possibility, you know, by reading this material, that maybe I had planned this experience. And why would I plan it? And that was a really important thing, was Robert Schwartz's books, Your Soul's Plan and Your Soul's Gift, Discovering the Life You Planned Before You Were Born. So I wanted to know if I had planned this experience and why. So the only thing I could do was call up my beloved Karis and say, look, would you be willing to make an appointment with, eventually it was two people. It was, first it was Elena Gabor and then Scott DeTamble, who was a virtuoso in the Life Between Lives hypnotherapy work. And he was, you know, talked about a lot through Rich Martini's books. And she did. She made an appointment. And they talk regularly now because she's had several great appointments with him. Now, a session lasts 4 to 5 hours. And she had, without reading all the books, I knew if I called her, she'd be objective. She's very, you know, very objective, very, very intelligent. And she would tell me if this was legitimate. So she had this experience. She underwent the hypnosis session, experienced the Life Between Lives. And she had a particular experience that was so healing for her that has sort of been with her all her life. And it really just changed everything for her. So I knew this was legitimate and real. So I was like, okay, maybe I could get her to sit as a surrogate in a session, kind of like Edgar Cayce style, mm-hmm. and, you know, call up my guides and ask 100 questions that I had, you know, been pondering. And her and she and Scott said that they would do that. And so they did it, and they did the first session. And oh my goodness, Patrick, I learned so many amazing things. Mm-hmm. And I read the transcript almost, well, weekly, over a period of a year. And
it all made sense.
Oh yeah. You know, and one of the fascinating things is I learned my immortal name. We all have an immortal name according to the material. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll just tell you, my immortal name is Elior. So that's the name that I have back home that I'm known by. And, but you know, I get a new name every time I get a new personality here on planet Earth. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things they say is that, you know, we're courageous to come here to Earth because it is such a complex sociopolitical, world that has just, you can, if you want to get a lot of work done fast, you come to planet Earth, you know, in terms of your soul, the wisdom experience of your soul. But I learned, and I'm just trying to make a, you know, long story short.
That's
but,
right.
I learned so much in those sessions. And then a year later, I asked Karis if she would do a follow-up session, and she did. And remember, these sessions are 4 or 5 hours long, and she's in total trance, and she's just, stuff is just coming out. And I'm really, you know, I grew up in a faith-based home. My father was a pastor. So I had to work my way through the idea of reincarnation and the Life Between Lives, mm-hmm. and really weigh and measure and everything, because, you know, I know the traditional stance on, you know, Western fundamentalism in terms of reincarnation and all that, and I had to work my way through it. But I learned that I effectively did plan my prison experience. It was a high probability that I agreed to when I took a different route in my life. And its purpose was to work a thing in me that I came here to work on in my life. And that's the thing about the material. It says that most everyone is right where they need to be. They are learning what they came here to learn. And you may ask yourself, why would somebody want to have children who are disabled? Or why would somebody want to have an addiction? Or why would somebody want to have these really hard lives, violent lives, or whatever? And you when you read Robert Schwartz's books, you find that it all just makes so much sense. And that's when I let go of judgment of everything. I had to let go of what I thought about anything and everything.
Yeah.
Then after about a year of this working its way through me and realizing that my purpose at this point in my life was learning to let go, to allow, relinquish, and release. When I had come to that conclusion, I knew that there was one more thing that I had to let go of that was really, really hard for me. I mean, I tried a lot, but up until that point, it was me trying, and I needed it to be natural. I needed it to be real. What was that? I needed to figure out how to forgive and let go of my resentment. In particular, the prosecutor, the judge, and the
FDA,
the FDA, and the government in general. Mm-hmm. I couldn't spend this much time in prison and learn this much and be, you know, have all this transformative information if it wasn't real, if it didn't really do something. And so I asked Karis if she'd do one more session. And, you know, in the session, she meets my guide. You know, it's so weird for me to actually say this because it just sounds so, you know, I don't know.
No, it's not, but, you know.
But she talks to my guide at great length and asks numerous questions. And I ask questions, you know, just silly, dumb questions like, okay, how many times have I reincarnated? And, you know, by percentage, am I more male or female? You know,
was I a king or a queen or something, you know.
Well, yeah, and I didn't actually ask any of that because that I didn't really care about that so much. What I wanted to know was what's the characteristic that I carry with me, you know, from life to life, that isn't personality based; it's more soul based. And what is my purpose here in this life? And am I meeting that purpose, or have I gone off the rails? Mm-hmm. Is that why I'm in prison? Because I'm off the rails? Am I supposed to be doing something really big, important, like changing the world or whatever, you know? And that's when I learned that everyone is really right where they're at. But I had asked Karis, I said, look, I need you to meet up with the souls of the judge, the prosecutor, and the FDA agent in this case and ask them some questions for me. And I had a hunch that once I heard those answers, I would be able to finally let go. And I was able to. I mean, when I read the transcript, I was like this relief washed over me, and it was finally done. I understood this historical nature of the relationships with these people and what their purpose was, and there was no animosity in them in what they had to say and share. And it was simply this: it was, look, you needed to be contained. You have an incredible amount of energy. And in order to come to Earth, you kind of have to work within the system. And those who don't work within the system need to be contained for a little bit, because this system is here to change you, to basically get you to grow and learn in wisdom. And we were a containment team. And it's interesting because she said the prosecutor and I were sort of like accountability partners from life to life, and we've actually fought in battles together. Uh-huh. I thought, wow, isn't that fascinating?
Wow.
And the FDA agent, there was some history with the judge and the FDA agent, but really, you know, and this whole process worked a thing in them too, and it's not for me to say or know or what that's all about, but, you know, because it's all so complex, and we have these complex soul groups that we're involved in.
Mm-hmm.
We're all doing these things together. But this was a big part of my life. And they came in as a containment group. Their job was to not give me anything that I wanted. And it doesn't matter how good my legal arguments were. No, the purpose here is to get you contained, because you have some unraveling to do. I'd asked about my... Why I lived in an adopted family. Was my adoption pre-planned before I was born? Because that's kind of an interesting thing, right? You know, I pick a certain genetic parents, mm-hmm. and then I go get adopted. And that was, yes, that was all planned. And I grew up in a very fundamentalist Christian life that was very constraining. And the purpose of that was to condense all of my energy, to keep it sort of condensed and sort of smelt it and get it ready for what I needed to do later on in my life, my growth later on in life, because I would need that energy. And sure enough, that's what got me through the prison experience and got me to the other side of this. And prison was a place where I could finally just let go. There wasn't anybody to convince of anything. I could sit down and finally read the books that I'd always wanted to read. I could listen to my heart. I could explore so many ideas. I mean, when you have 3 years to think, I mean, it's so different in prison than it is out in the outside world, because there's always something happening out here. In there, it's all internal.
Just you and God, right? That's it.
Yeah, absolutely. You're just kind of letting go and seeing what's there.
We've had so many people on the show over the years, Daniel Smith, that, you know, they've gone through cancer and healed, and they look back on some of the things they went through, and they'll say things like, it was the greatest experience I ever had when I had cancer. I learned so much, you know. Are you at that point already, looking back and say, man, this experience was really good in a way, going to prison?
Well, yeah, I'm actually, I do feel that way.
Yeah, I can tell it in your voice.
But I think there's more lessons to more, it's processing. You know, I still have, you know, this post-prison probation thing, and I have to sort of look at that and go, okay, I'm still under constraint for a while, in what I can do and my liberties. And there must be a reason for that. So there must be something that I need to learn and grow from all that. And so I'm just kind of allowing that. And
Have you found that the more you surrender to this process, as well as being on probation, is it probation or parole or both? What is it?
It's not parole.
It's more probation.
It's called supervised release.
Supervised release. That the more you give into that and be kind and gentle with the people, because I heard you on the phone with one yesterday, that I think you'll find that that experience even gets better and better and better as you surrender to the process. You're learning that, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. These people are
they're doing their
good job. They're playing their role, and I've got no bad feelings about any of them. And even my supervised release person said, look, I'm not the court. I'm not the prosecutor. I'm just a guy doing his job, watching over you for supervised release. And if we get along great. I got to go in and do my UAs. That's great because I don't do drugs. You know, I'm not too worried about that. And, you know, I have my financial obligation to the court still that I'm working on. And I have some, you know, general rules that I have to live by. These are not hard. These are not hard. And they're good. They're good for, you know, somebody like me who likes to just, you know, go. I need one of the things I've had to learn was, you know, how to organize my time a full week ahead or a week and a half ahead. I mean, it's one thing to have an appointment on the calendar, but to get down to the half an hour and the hour mark of everything, you know, a week and a half ahead of time has been quite a challenge, because you got to put it all on a form and say, this is what you're doing, where you're going. And
here's an email from George. Maybe Daniel doesn't want to talk about it, but would he please spend a little bit of time of telling us how the life in prison was? Was it, and he's got three words here, was it terrible, doable, or I don't want to talk about it? George, we have great listeners, man. I gave you choices.
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't think my guides, they didn't put me through anything I couldn't handle. But at times it was terrifying. I mean, there are some things about prison that people on the outside will just never understand.
Really?
One of the things is that it is the most racist place on planet Earth.
Wow.
It took me a while to understand. And there's this thing where you say you have to ride with your car. You can't hang out with what they call the Pisces. You know, it's very racial. I mean, you can in some instances, but if there happens to be an upheaval and violence, you have to ride with your car. And
what does
if
that
you
mean?
Don't
ride with your car.
Well, ride with your car. That means I'm white. And I have to fight with the whites, you know, that sort of thing.
Hmm.
No. Thankfully, I didn't get into any of those situations. But, you know, I saw a lot of violence. I saw, what I saw was probably just, I know it was scratching the surface, because I heard plenty of stories about other facilities, you know, high security USPs and so forth. I mean, you know, where I was things were okay, but there was still, you saw a side of life that you just didn't know existed, and you never would.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is a lot of the people in prison are really kind, good people. A lot of the people I went to prison with were just, they grew marijuana. I mean, which is so legal in so many states now. But you know, it's not legal federally. Let's make that clear. And, so prison is a surprise in so many ways, but I found that the people, once you get to the federal level, are actually decent people. There are a few people that, you know, they're working on their own issues, but
it's the old county. It's the old idea of whatever doesn't kill you will make you stronger kind of thing.
I bet the food was terrible.
Well, I was going to ask you about the food, man. The food was like, I could imagine. Was it just not really good?
It was the worst grade possible of meat.
Wow.
And the worst grade possible of vegetables. Sometimes the boxes that would come in at county, for example, would say not for human consumption.
Really?
And that's what they would feed. I don't know if that happens at the federal level. I've heard it does, but you know, I don't have any evidence of that other than the food was just horrible.
Well, I saw your video. You look kind of good. It didn't look like you suffered too much physically with all that rotten food and all that. Must have been your state of consciousness that protected you there.
Well, I think I got healthier, for one. I lived very ketogenically as much as possible, lost some weight, kept my mind pretty clear. I mean, I went off and on. You know, in 3.5 years, you can have a lot of ups and downs because there's a lot of things going on at home that are stressful. You can't help. You can't fix anything. Mm-hmm. You get 15-minute phone calls. You get 300 minutes a month, and which sounds like a lot but isn't. I mean, you could basically rip through that in a week. And, you know, prison is fine.
Here's an email from Amanda. Patrick oftentimes talks about a product called Closest that he uses. And he's told us on the air, and I have the label right here. I don't know, have you ever heard of this product, Closest, Daniel?
No, that doesn't.
CLOSYS. You can put on Amazon. Do you know what the ingredient is?
Yeah, we've used that before.
Stabilize chlorine dioxide.
Yeah, great product.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Stabilize chlorine dioxide. Procter & Gamble, one of these guys. Interesting.
Good stuff. I use that in the morning for dental. I haven't, obviously, in a while, but we did before.
Mm-hmm. So did you feel like you really had skilled attorneys? Just back to the physical stuff. I mean, that it didn't matter though what arguments they put against. It just wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, the gentleman who did my appeal did a stellar job of listening, of going through all my work. He would say, "Yeah, I totally agree with your legal arguments here. You know, the court was wrong, the government was wrong, or whatever," and did a stellar job for the entire time that he was my appellate attorney through the process through prison. But at the end of the day, the Ninth Circuit disregarded everything and didn't even answer the issues that we put in our appeal. Because if they had, they would have ruled.
So in the original trial, how about that attorney?
The original trial, okay, so... Yeah, he did not even put on a defense because he did not prepare, because he thought that my best bet was an ineffective counsel solution, because the case was so complex, so convoluted. There were 30 some witnesses on both sides, and that's just an average. But he did not put on a defense, which was a surprise to me. And when that happened, mid-trial, I objected and I said, "Look, I got witnesses standing by. Let me put on my own defense, because you know, basically the government stands up, says defendant is bad, 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 and then you don't stand up and say anything. What's going to happen? What's going to happen? Well, obviously they're going to convict." It did take them a few days of deliberation, and they did acquit on one charge, and it's ironic because So there were four controlled buys. They didn't convict on one of them, because there wasn't a pamphlet that went out that sung the praises of chlorine dioxide. And so they couldn't classify it as a drug. And so at least the jury was savvy enough to understand that. That was pretty cool. But yeah, we didn't get to put on a defense. And we argued that at every level, but it was...
It was just one of those things. So yeah. The sentence was 3.5 years in prison, and that's what you spent?
Well, no, the sentence is 51 months. And of course, I got good time for good behavior. And I got halfway house and home confinement to finish up the sentence. And then I have 4 years of supervised release, which I'm told, if I'm a good boy, maybe around halfway through that, I can have that cut.
Supervised would be just a monthly kind of report in, make sure you're cool and
that
kind of thing. Don't get in trouble.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. What a story. Yeah. So, you know, I'm curious, though. So the originally your wife was arrested, too, but then they just chose just to indict you.
I know they indicted 4 people, and that's because they get them all working against each other because they all have to have separate attorneys, and the separate attorneys doesn't care about, you know, like, you know, your spouse's situation. They're only there to represent you, so they'll eat your spouse alive in the courtroom to get theirs off. You know, it's this ripsaw that they put you through. And they get everyone to plead out. Well, I was the one that wouldn't plead out. And my wife did plead to misdemeanors and just got...
probation.
Probation, and which she's already off of and gotten on with her life. But they wanted me, they would only offer me if I pled to felonies, and they couldn't tell me how long I would spend. And I said, look, I'm not going to say I did something I didn't do to make your life easier and still go to prison. So, no thanks. It was kind of like The Matrix.
So you weren't able to do a deal where you knew exactly what it would be, 2 years or something like that?
Yeah, because it was offered the night before trial, and I'm like, what? You know, you can't tell me how long I'm going to do? You know, and the big thing was my daughter was turning 11. I had tickets to her favorite artist at the time, Lindsey Stirling, backstage passes for her birthday. And I wasn't going to miss that for the world. And if I pled out, well, then they would have locked me up and I would have missed it. And I wasn't going to miss that.
Wow. That's a real dad, boy. That's a dad. Daniel Smith is with us. Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. So here's another email. Eli, but I don't understand, how are people selling MMS today on the internet?
Well, because it's not illegal. Remember, everything that the FDA said about MMS was... it's really super dangerous, and here's these technicalities that we think maybe we can get a conviction on, and if, you know, Daniel plays into our hands and does everything stupid, we will win. And I certainly did, because I was pro se, and you know, I railed against the system, and the system railed back, and you just don't do that. But it's not illegal to sell MMS, and in fact, you know, I'd probably get kicked out of the house if I went back into selling MMS.
the point is that
I technically could, because it's not illegal. What they said was, look, there was therapeutic claims made about this, so we classified it as a drug, and then we said that you misbranded because your manufacturer didn't do a thing, and then we added on all this other stuff that's kind of willy nilly, like you conspired to do it and you fraudulently imported it because you didn't classify it as a drug and so forth.
Well, how is it different legally with all the claims that are made, with all this stuff out there? A lot of people make claims. We're very careful here, you know, to not make any kind of claims about stuff, but so many websites, and it's commercial. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, people make claims about foods and superfoods. And
you know what? I want to answer that.
Yeah, because I'm real curious what's going on with all that.
Yeah. Could I take a 30-second break real quick?
You can do whatever you want. I got to do a commercial anyway, so stay right there. Yeah, okay. Take as long as you need. Previously on Open Phone Friday.
It's great, but listen.
Yeah.
On the Carbon 60, C60, and all of that, I got 3 of his products, the Carbon C60 and the other one, and I've only been doing it, I don't know if I've been doing it 3 weeks yet. OMG, it's awesome, awesome. It's bringing me back. It's doing something, good stuff.
Oh, from Wayne. Oh, the Living Streams products, yeah.
Yep.
So you got the perfect molecule, right? That's what it's called? That's Wayne's special way to bring C60 into your body.
I did.
And which one?
I love it.
What else did you get?
I got the Bifida, whatever, number 2. Ordered that one, and that's the one you're supposed to be putting in your ear. So I put it in my mouth and my ear, and then I got like the overall one. He's told everybody to get that one.
Living Streams multi-blend?
Yeah.
That's just the broad spectrum. Good for you. So what have you felt, and how long have you been taking them?
Well, like I said, I don't think it's 3 weeks yet. And what did I feel? Well, this morning I did yoga on the beach longer than I've done in the longest time by myself, and even did back bends and headstands and shoulder stands. So I'm like, something's feeling good to help me just get my butt moving, you know. And
I think you'll have a good experience regardless of what you start with on Living Streams. But similar to Bridget, we'd recommend the Living Streams Minerals. Wayne's probiotic version of C60, called the Perfect Molecule, and the Living Streams Multi-Blend. And that's got a great combination of paracasey and subspecies and human DNA probiotics that you just don't find anywhere else. Click on the Living Streams banner, choose what you want, or go into our store and just click on one of the products and you'll be in. Living Streams Probiotics. OneRadioNetwork.com. Science has shown that the immune system is in the gut, and so probiotics are being used in all over the world to help people's body get healthier and stronger and stuff like that. So these Living Streams things may be something that your body would like, so you could give them a try. Glyphosates are a lot. They're all over the place, and Wayne has said that they've done experiments and Chabide is a couple good things you can take, and these probiotics that'll help the body to cleanse itself from glyphosates. Glyphosate things are a big deal. I don't know if you heard about this lawsuit that fellow won $289 million in California when they sued Monsanto because he said it caused cancer, and now though that they are hearing arguments to overturn that in appeal. So, you know, this could be a long thing, and these glyphosates may be around for a long time. So, you know, we just do what we can to keep our bodies clean as we can with some of the challenges out there. Previously with cardiologist Dr. Joel Kahn, 35 years experience in cardiology.
On your commercial break, you hit a hot button because I'm a giant fan of infrared sauna and the cardiac benefits.
Tell us about why you like these saunas for the heart. What does it do?
In Japan, it's a traditional therapy of heart disease to even sick heart patients to sit for 15 or 20 minutes in an infrared sauna, then lie down and rest and hydrate for about half an hour. They call it Waon, W-A-O-N. It means soothing heat. And they've done research studies, like 30 of them, in humans. Anti-ages your arteries and improves the strength of your heart, and it may actually prolong survival in sick heart patients. Anybody can just, again, go to the internet, read about infrared sauna heart disease, or put my name there because I've written many articles about it. Now there's data coming out of Sweden and Finland because they've published some amazing data. The number of times a week you're in a sauna, number of minutes each time, you can just track out how long you're going to live. So very powerful therapy by being in, my favorite is an infrared sauna.
Well, I don't know about you, but if the heart muscles and the arteries are happy, things are good. Very important. We promote the Relax Far Infrared Sauna. Special price, not in print, $9.95, delivered continental U.S. Get your heart and keep your heart and arteries in fine shape by using the Relax Far Infrared Sauna. Email me for the special price, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Saunas have been used since, the beginning of time, since people figured out how to do sweat lodges. And the Indians used to do it. And, of course, in Eastern Europe, it's been part of their culture for a long time. And sweating detoxifies the body. And these are cool. And they're very low electromagnetic fields. And if you email me, we'll hook you up no matter where you live. Patrick@oneradionetwork.com, $9.95 delivered. And if you live outside the United States, they're usually only $100 or $150 or $200 bucks extra, depending on where you live, and it'll come with the proper plug. So really, really nice little units. You sit in there with your head outside so you don't heat up your head. Pretty cool stuff. Relaxed far infrared sauna. Be careful. There's quite a few imitators, knockoffs. They're trying to sell you one for $600-700 or, but they're not the same. You got to make sure you get the real deal. Technology is out of Taiwan, where they made it a medical university. They won some awards for the technology, and these things get real hot. A lot of the infrared saunas don't get very hot, but they do a good job, you know, the wooden ones, and they can get some with low EMFs, but they don't really heat up the body. You don't sweat that much, but these are kind of double, where you get to sweat and get the far infrared rays that have been said over the years. People believe that they detoxify the body, far infrared saunas, and science behind it. Patrick@oneradionetwork.com is the email if you'd like to get one. We're kind of wrapping it up here, and with Daniel Smith. So where were we going to, we were talking, I was asking about herbs and claims, and what's your sense of what's going on out there now and why things are the way they are in the natural world, and even in the natural world, I guess.
Well, if I remember, it was in the context of we were talking about making claims and so forth.
Right.
And there's if there's something that is a required something that you eat, a food, not even it doesn't even have to be required, a food that you eat, then it falls under a supplement. You're supplementing your diet with it, and so it falls under the DSHEA Act, which is like this little last vestige of protection for us naturalists when it comes to the FDA. If it wasn't for DSHEA, you wouldn't be able to say a darn thing about anything.
Like vitamin C can do this or whatever.
Yeah. Because these are basically you can essentially say, yeah, vitamins are good for this, etc. But it's a food supplement. And so as long as you disclaim and say, look, this hasn't been evaluated by the FDA, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But in our case, MMS was not technically a food supplement. And there was some question on whether or not they could declare it a drug, because at the end of the day, guess what? The end user was the one that was manufacturing the alleged drug.
Because they were taking the sodium chloride.
Right. Well, they would say, well, that's a component. And I would say, no, it's not a component. The end product does not have sodium chloride in it, either as an active or an inactive ingredient. So it's technically not a component. So therefore, the statute doesn't even apply. But we didn't even get to make that argument because we didn't get a percent of defense. So, but the whole point is that you can say things, but a lot of people will say, look, I can't tell you anything about this product. Look, you can say anything you want about the product, but if they can find a way to categorize it as a drug because of the intent on which you're selling it, they will. And then that's not even illegal. But a lot of people confuse the issue and say that they think that's illegal to say a thing about a product. That's not what's illegal. Saying a thing about a product is what makes them classify it as a drug. And then they apply the misbranding statutes, and they can usually find something that you did wrong that you didn't even know you were doing wrong because you didn't think it was a drug and that it would be classified as a drug. So you just thought it was a health supplement, for example. So just to clarify, it's not.
So how does it get classified as a drug? In simple terms, talk to us like we're a golden retriever or a small child. How does it get classified as a drug? Like, say, it's like, say, an herb. Or like we promote, like pine pollen, right, which comes from trees and boosts people's strength and testosterone and stuff. So how would that get classified as a drug if Daniel Vitalis said this or that about it?
Okay, if the intent is for you to use that product to change the structure of the function of the body, or to cure, or to mitigate, or to prevent disease in man, or as the FDA likes to say, other animals, as if man is also an animal, they will capture it under their regulatory scheme as a drug. Now, a lot of people, the FDA can't go after everyone. They select who they're going to go after. In our case, what we found out in the discovery was that when the H1N1 flu came out, the FDA created a task force whose job was to sit on the internet and find everybody who made a claim that they had a product, whether it was herbal or otherwise, that could cure, mitigate, or prevent H1N1. And then they went after them. And in our case, PGL did not specifically state that, but other people on the web did. But everywhere you looked, PGL was prominent as a reseller of MMS. So that's when they started poking around in our stuff and, you know, wanted to, they came to the fulfillment center and so forth. So if they can capture it and they have an agenda to do so, that's how they do it. They do it by just saying, what's your intent when you sell it? But that's not illegal. What's your intent? That's not what's illegal. What's illegal is the misbranding regulation that they go after.
And on the website. And how do you misbrand it? By doing what?
I think it's 21 USC 351. It's this list of all these things that you could do to misbrand. For example, in our let's say your label did not have the name and address of the manufacturer, packer, or distributor. Mm-hmm. Or let's say your manufacturer didn't register with the U.S. Secretary of Health. Or perhaps you said there was an ingredient that there wasn't. Or you didn't put the right disclaimers or the right things on the bottle, or the packaging was, you know, that it came with was wrong. There's 100 different ways to misbrand, and some of them you would think, well, this doesn't even belong under misbranding, because that's not technically a misbranding is not necessarily mislabeling. It's just an it's really poorly named statute, but there are many ways to misbrand.
Yeah. Where do you think this is all going as far as, are you hopeful for the health freedom of taking these things, or what do you think's going on?
Well, that's a good segue into this, the idea that regardless of what the government does, our bodies are still thought forms. And if you're a true immortalist at heart, it really doesn't matter what the government's doing. Look, I read so much material of folks, mainly of the Eastern tradition, that gave up eating. They didn't even need food, and they lived hundreds of years.
Right.
I mean, the idea that you need food is it's a physical construct that, you know, yeah, okay, so you require it. I could say it's the placebo effect. I need food to survive. Okay. So really, at the end of the day, where it's going, regulation, the government's going to continue to become tighter and tighter and tighter until, you know, that's what governments do, until they're overthrown. And it's just the nature of humanity and how things go. And this is all working its thing in us. But you can rise above that by having a different state of consciousness. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I kind of think of these fun things we take as just tools, but it's all just information. And I think the broccoli is just a medium, you know, for God stuff. And you can let the broccoli go and you still get the God stuff, which is what's running everything, isn't it? Spirit. And
Well, you know, there's, you know, one of the, I read a lot of material from Ramtha. I never went to the school, but I really loved the material. And it comes down to this. In that philosophy, is that consciousness or thought slowed down becomes light, and light becomes electrum, and electrum becomes the physical world, the atoms that we see, which put together create form. You can go all the way up the ladder. And you can, or you can live all the way down on the ladder. Mm-hmm. And all the way down here on the ladder, we have some great tools that can help us get clear and raise our level of consciousness until we're ready to be at the higher level where we're not constrained. We're not required to eat broccoli, but you know we can because it does give us voltage. It gives us voltage for our physical form, right?
So yeah, it's fun. And people get around, and you don't want to be the only one not eating at dinner, you know. It's like, so you just have a little.
Eating is a great pastime.
It's kind of fun, you know. Hey, Jeffrey writes in, are you telling me that the fake delusional agency is for us, LOL? The fake delusional...
It's for us, as in like they're trying to benefit us or something?
Yeah, I guess he means for us, because I think you alluded to the idea, and I've said it before, that we've created the government, so why be angry at them? They're just doing their job.
You know, that's a complex question. It's funny because the government is made up of people, but those people are just like you and I doing a job, and some have more information than others. And some are, you know, have a higher consciousness than others. I met a lot of people in BOP, for example, that were just quality human beings. And I would ask myself, why do you work here? How can you be around this all day? I would just be, you know, it would just tax me too much to partake in this. But the FDA itself, yeah, we created this whole reality, but we also created within that matrix the government that we have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're doing this. So whether or not, I can't say that they're for us. I mean, yeah, sometimes they have agendas, and sometimes they're driven by politics and money and pharmaceutical and keeping the whole system running. And sometimes that's not in the individual's best interest. I get all that. That's a given. So,
yeah, it's great, man. Planet Earth, what a trip. So what's on Daniel Smith is an agenda for your future? Are you thinking about kind of work you want to do and all that stuff? Are you there yet, or are you still hanging out at home trying to figure out what to do with the rest of your life?
Well, I've been using this time to reconnect with family,
mm-hmm.
And kind of just allow, relinquish, release, and decide, you know, to kind of determine what comes at me, what I'm going to spend my life doing. I have all these things in my heart that I'd like to do, and that's a really good question that you've asked, because I want to bring up today I woke up. If I want to invite the world to be a part of a project that I call Today I Woke Up, and I had mentioned to you yesterday that I had written a poem in 2007 that sort of preceded my journey. And, you know, the first few lines were, today I woke up and I was everything I wanted to meet. I forgave everyone of everything, even those who made me feel ashamed. I wasn't afraid of anything anymore. And this kind of became, became a viral thing on the web. But after I went through the experience, those things became real to me. And I feel like one of the things that I want to do right now is make that, I don't know, an inspirational piece for others, because a lot of people wrote me and said, that should be a book, or that should
sure.
be this or that.
Yeah,
or whatever. And so what I've done is you know, you can find out more about it at standbydaniel.com. It's a site that some supporters and my dad maintained while I was in prison. But there it talks about the Today I Woke Up project. And I'm inviting people to sort of just record in their own voice the poem. And then I'm going to mix all the voices together and produce a new video for it, and with voices from all around the world.
Oh,
so if that's
cool.
something
that's cool,
that you
yeah.
want to be a part of, and including you, Patrick, I'd love to have your voice on there.
And so is it todayiwokeup.com? Or?
No, unfortunately I lost the .com when I was in prison, but
okay.
You know, we're still trying to acquire a different website. But if you go to standbydaniel.com,
okay.
The very last update discusses the project. It gives you the words, it gives you links to two videos so that you can kind of see what we're going for.
Oh, cool.
And I've received some already, and I love them, and I would love to get more. That's kind of, and you asked what I wanted to do. That's something that's on my heart to do.
Oh,
so.
That's great. So, would some of those couple of those videos be suitable that we could post for you on our front page of our website? Can we do that?
Oh, you're more than welcome to
cool.
to post Today I Woke Up. I'm sure your audience would
like it. Yeah. Well, that's a great kind of a thing to do. And wow.
It's short. It's 2.5 minutes. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's just a poem, but it's very inspirational.
Yeah.
So.
And you've had quite a bit over the years, quite a bit of support during your prison stay from people around the world, right? Heard about this.
Yeah, let me tell you. I mean,
that's been amazing.
I made it through prison. I got so many letters from people all over the world. And I'll tell you, the first day I was in prison, I'm standing in line to get to the computer, and this guy in front of me proceeds to tell me that he asked why I was in, and said, "Oh yeah, I used that product to cure my prostate cancer," and I'm like, "Oh, I'm not a bad guy after all," because here I am in prison, you know. But I had support inside, but I had support outside from all over the world, letters and cards from people I didn't even know, telling me how MMS changed their life or just encouraging me. And I've never felt more loved in my life. It was an amazing journey that I don't think I could have done without all those letters. So let me just say, if anyone here that was a part of that, thank you very much for writing me, and you know, I just loved it when I got cards. It was great.
You know, you mentioned about there's so many people that use marijuana and stuff and are in jail, and there's a pretty big movement afoot in our national government and the Trump administration to do some prison reform and let these people out. So, you know, I don't know if that's going to get to that, but you know.
That would be great.
I know.
You know,
there's
a lot of money in
oh yeah.
Must, prison.
So. Yeah, it's, you know, wacky tobacco is kind of weird. We don't support it because I don't use it. I think it's weird. But, I mean, why put people in prison for using it? It doesn't really make sense, does it? You know, but that's just me. Well, kiddo, thanks for being here. We appreciate your sharing your story and being so honest and upfront about it. And God love you. StandbyDaniel.com. That's the main place to connect with you right now, right?
Yeah, for now, yeah.
All right, kiddo. Thanks a lot. Let us know if we can help with anything, and you have my email. If I can support you in any way, let me know. And if if we ever get up that way, we'll come and visit. Yeah,
you're welcome anytime.
We need to come up to Portlandia, you know, see how wacky it is. You know,
it's Washington.
Oh, that's right. That's in Oregon. Right? You're in Washington. All right, Daniel Smith. Thanks a lot for being here, and may the blessings be.
Yes, love y'all. We'll
Thank see you. Ya. Love you too, kid. Daniel Smith, Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. What a story. Can you imagine going through all that? Yow. Daniel, hold on 1 second if you're still on Skype. I just want to say goodbye off the air. So I love you all very much. Thanks for your ongoing support. To me, it's like amazing that I get to make a living doing this, just talking to you and presenting different fun people and promoting some products that we like, and that's how we make a living. So if you see some things you might want to try and play around with, we know the people, and they're all, you know, reputable folks that have good products that your body might like. And so we'll see you tomorrow with Andrew Goss and the Real World of Money, and we'll talk about the brain. And there's a scientist type out there that says, you know, the brain is not the source of consciousness, and so we know that. So we thought we'd talk to him, and we'll see what else is on tap for us for the remainder of this week. So we'll see you tomorrow with Andrew Goss. I love you all very much, and may the blessings be.
From the Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.